Good morning. This is October the 6th, 1993, and this is part two of Maitreya's lecture on universalism.
Let's all come here in this room. Any tension or any other thought go away. Let the spirit come through all of us in the calmest way. And let us be one in spirit as we approach this subject all together. So. Okay, does anybody remember what we talked about yesterday? The whole thing? No? How come? Wasn't a good lecture, huh?
It wasn't a good lecture.
No, yeah. I said,
it wasn't a good lecture, you said. Okay. Okay, as we remember, yesterday we talked about how eventually Bob claimed himself to be the one day Muslim, or the at least Shia Muslim were expected him to come. The Mahdi, the Bob, of course he called himself Bob in the beginning, but at his mission progress, he claimed deeper and deeper level of, I can understand that, you know, when you receive the revelation, you know, actually you keep telling, you know, God, why me, you know, there's 4 billion people out there, you know, why do you come and tell me to go and tell humanity this message? So, yeah, it's a little shy about really claiming, you know, what this revelation is and what it all mean. Also in that environment, especially in the environment that they were so hostile to any claim or anything, that and they didn't have the law of freedom of religion and all that. So it was, so he was trying not to really let it out very easily. So he said he's Bob, and then later on he claimed that he's the voice, and later on he's the hidden Imam, and eventually he said he's the divine manifestation. And actually in the beginning he thought the government is going to help him. And he actually wrote to the heads of governments, and he wrote, but he wrote to the Shah, that, you know, he'd like to meet him. He thought if he meets Shah, he can explain what he wants to do, and he's going to be supporting him. Mm-hmm. And actually, there was the governor of the Isfahan, one of the cities, one of the major cities in Iran, actually he did support him for a while. He actually left Shiraz because the government in Shiraz, he was very against Bob, and actually prosecuted him and made him to retract from his claim in front of everyone in the mosque. But the government of Isfahan, another person, he actually invited him to leave Shiraz and went to that city. And I guess he lived there around a year with him. So, but eventually, again, the priests and mullahs in Isfahan, you know, raised against him, and eventually pushed him out of that city too. So he was just, his followers were all over. He's, you know, a lot of people were getting converted, and he himself, you know, trying to establish, you know, some connection with some authority, that, because that's how he felt. He says he actually praised the Shah about, you know, how can he help this thing to be established and accomplished and all that. But little by little, his disciples went around, and Rabbis became a kind of, as we said, militant. Mm-hmm. And so the government supporting him in the beginning for a while, because they felt they can use him against the against the Mujahideens, against the mullahs, against the religious establishment. So in the sense that they felt he can be used, you know, in that sense. You know, but when the mob start attacking Babis, and the government had to get involved all the time to get them away from each other, little by little they felt that they are getting to be trouble. And also, of course, the prime minister in that time was a person he also didn't like. What happened? Yeah, can you see this guy's a little quiet? Yeah, a little bit. And the prime minister also wasn't very, you know, very much with Bob, so also he didn't have much luck over there with the authority. And eventually, what happened was,
Izzy, get a little quiet when you have a lecture.
You have to be a little quiet when you have a lecture, okay?
Okay.
And so eventually it got so bad that they decided to put Bob into prison. So they took him and put him in a prison somewhere in North Iran, in one of the castles, one of the fortress they have. Okay. But that fortress was too close to Russian border. Okay. So the Babis were getting close to Russian border, and the Russian ambassador in Tehran, you know, complained about it. You know, and eventually they moved him from there to another fortress in the west of Iran. And in there, it was there actually that he wrote Bayan. His book, his scripture for the Babis. And in that Bayan, of course, he, you know, he wrote a lot of things, and one of the things he wrote was he predicted he who God will manifest will come after him. And of course, you know, and he said that when he comes, you know, his Bayan or his scriptures, every verse of his scriptures, you know, worth 1,000 Bayan. And now here in that place, he claimed that he is the Imam himself. No longer he said, I'm the Bab. And eventually they brought him back to another city, Tabriz, in the west of Iran, and they put him in trial. They tried to discredit him. Okay, so the mullahs got together with him, and they start arguing, discussing religion's points and all that. And there he claimed that he is the major manifestation, you know, right in the middle of it. So they felt, you know, he's really, you know, crazy or something. They really tried to get him up there, you know, with the wars and everything. And I think actually somebody, you know, I'm not sure about that. So eventually they send him back to that fortress for a while, and the government changed, and the new Shah came, and the new prime minister came, and the new prime minister was absolutely against any religious movement or any dissension in the country, and he really wanted to get it going, and that's why he eventually decided, you know, Bob had to go. You know, so they have already decided they're gonna, you know, just get rid of him. And that's when they brought him back to Tabriz and put him in trial, and he didn't withdraw his claim. He said, that's what I am, that's what I am. And then they took him to a couple of those big mullahs, the mujahideens, and they passed fatwa that, yeah, he is a infidel and he should be, you know, put to death. And actually, you know, one of those mullahs told him, you just tell us that, you know, you're not imam, you know, we just let you go. And actually, when he was coming from the fortress last time to Tabriz, people were so stirred up by him that when he comes and he takes a shower somewhere, the people riot and take the water as some blessed water, you know, from his, you know, taking shower. And so government was pretty, you know, stirred up because of his presence, you know, and the attraction that people are getting toward him. Actually, if they had accepted his teaching, although it wasn't perfect, you know, the Bible says also it is in the fifth seal. If you study in the Revelation, it says you are not perfect. So that teaching is not. Actually, even in the books, in the intellectual books that, you know, I read some of them to get some information about him, you know, they reached the same conclusion that his teaching wasn't perfect. And that is why one of the reasons they had some problems with his followers and all, you know, implemented and all that. So when, but even if they had accepted some of his ideas, you know, those Muslims would be in a much better shape. Just like any Messiah, any new revelation comes, if the people accept it, but the evolutionary process of those people will going to be accelerated, you know. And but if they don't, of course it falls to darkness. Yeah, just like Jewish people were waiting for Christ to come. Christ came, they didn't accept him. What happened to Jewish people? They were taken away, scattered, and then Christians were waiting for Messiah to come. Muhammad came, and they didn't accept. What happened to Europe? Europe fell to darkness and dark ages. And the same thing when Muslims were waiting for them, their Messiah came, and then Bob came, and they didn't accept. What happened to Muslims? They fell to the darkness. And it just, that's exactly what God says in Revelation. Anytime a seal is opened, a great upheaval comes to earth. Okay. And that's the process of purification. Of course, they shouldn't have accepted him. For instance, if every Jew accepted Christianity, we wouldn't have any Jews now. We wouldn't know too much about the Old Testament and the teaching, and they wouldn't be carried away to all the nations so they can preach their gospel to every nation. And, you know, Jewish gospel, the Old Testament, it's almost universal. Everybody knows about them, you know, the whole earth. Why? Because they were carried away and they were all over the earth. So they had it with them, you know, and they also taught to other people. So it shouldn't have happened before. They shouldn't have accepted the Messiah or the new teaching, because we should have a mystical path. We should have Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Baha'i, and all that. Because, you know, now we can put them together and say, you know, they are connected to each other. But if they had accepted Bob, you know, that would have been, you know, that would have been a great progress in their, you know, in their society. Eventually, they took him to the place to prosecute him, and of course, a lot of people who they choose to prosecute him, they're going to shoot him, you know, put him into the wall and just shoot. Actually, they hanged him with the rope, I guess, something like that. I don't know how did they hang him, not with the neck, but as if with the hands in the back and the feet or something. I guess they were kind of was at the middle of the wall or something. And so they eventually choose 1,000 shooter to shoot Bob. I don't know if it's exaggerated or not, but that's what I got him from the regular books. It wasn't from Bobby's or Baha'i's that they might have. Is that right too? 750? Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I saw in that book, I saw the picture of Asai, the one I was talking about, the finder of the sheikhis. Yeah. Sounds like a nice book. So anyway, a lot of people didn't want to do that because they accepted, they had the feeling of, yeah, he is a prophet, he is a person, you know, innocent, you know, they didn't want to shoot him. So they had to choose very few people and come up with 1,000 people that they thought they were going to do it. Okay. And they put him in the wall, and 1,000, okay. And then the night before that, there was another person who was accused of being Bobby. And Bob said everyone that was Bobby that denounced him, you know, because he didn't want the other people to get killed. So he said, everybody denounced me as thing, but I will not denounce myself. And most of his followers, even his scribes and people who, his secretaries, everybody, you know, accepted, denounced him, and so they didn't get killed. But there was one person was in prison, and he said, no, he is Bob, I know him, he is Bob, he is the Messiah, I'm not going to withdraw, you know. So there was another disciple with him, which came, and they also wanted to murder him, shoot him. So they put him in the wall, and the 1,000 shot goes, or 750, even 500 shot goes. The only thing happens, the ropes get shot, and both of people, Bob and the other person, fall, and there was a lot of smoke. Of course, that time the shoot was those things that you have to. So there's a lot of smoke, 500 things, and the smoke clears. No Bob. Okay, there's no Bob around. Okay. Actually, some people say that if Bob, because they kept asking him, show us miracles. If you show us miracles, we believe you. If you don't show us miracles, just like here, people come here to the mission. If you show us miracles, I believe you. If you don't show miracles, no, we don't believe you. It's okay. That's why, you know, and Bob keep telling them, you know, I don't need to give you miracles. Still, I claim who I am. Okay. But some people say when this 1,000 shot, 750 shot went out and he didn't kill, if he would just stay and say, look, this is a miracle, everybody would have probably accepted him and followed him and all that. But they find him in one of the rooms around the compound. Okay. And they bring him back, and I guess this time, you know, the leader of the fire squad tell them, if you don't shoot him, you're going to be in trouble, something. So this time, also it is possible that the people they would choose and to shoot him, they really didn't want to shoot him. So everybody either aimed at the robe or aimed somewhere else. Okay? Just that they didn't want the conscious to be, they want their conscious to be clear, I didn't shoot him. Okay, so all the people didn't shoot at him, they shoot around him. But this time I guess they didn't have a choice, and they shoot him, and they took the body and threw him out of the city in the dump, somewhere in the city. Of course that became a controversial topic also, because a lot of Bobby's complained to some ambassadors from England and Russia that how they treated Bob, and there was some complaint about them to the Shah, and eventually some people say they stole the body and kept it, you know, somewhere, and eventually they brought it to Jerusalem, and there is a shrine there, and that's what they say the Bobby's thing. Rested. Any question? Any answer? Of course, before Bob died, he chose a person in Tehran by the name Sopi Azal. By the name Mirza Yahya. Okay, but he gave the name Sobh-e Azal. It means, what does the name Sobh-e Azal means? The morning glory, or morning, or the morning of eternity, something like that. Sobh-e Azal. And it was, and he let all the letter of the living, or letter of the living, those 19 disciples, remember, the one that first converted to Babis, they know that he chose Sobh-e Azal, and let a lot of other Babis know that he chose them. Actually, he sent some of his personal article to him. That meant that we are one almost. You know, he just sent his pen and pencil and some clothing and something that he personally asked him before he was, you know, shot. So it was pretty clear that he chose the Sobh-e Azal as his successor, right? And of course, one of the things, well, Sobh-e Azal was a young man, and he was and he has a brother that he eventually would call Baha'u'llah. And his brother helped him and teach him, and he was taking care of Sobh-e Azal, you know, and it's apparently very close. So it's not like Baha'u'llah kind of was a big brother to him, you know, and they were grown together. And what happened, one of the things was, one of the follower of Bab, his name was Quds. And they believed that he was Prophet Muhammad, as returned. Okay. And when Quds become martyred, they say he's a spirit who lived and went to Sobh-e Azal. He gets sick for 3 days, and after he comes back, the 6 continents change a little bit, like a thing. Well, whatever is true, it doesn't really matter, but the important thing is, Bab did choose Sobh-e Azal as his successor. And Sobh-e Azal, of course, after Bab dies, a lot of claim are with the many people that claiming they are the manifestation who he will manifest, who God will manifest. That's exactly what Bab said. Bab said, who God will manifest will come after me. And many people start claiming, I am the one. Okay? And of course, nobody accepted them because of Azal took over and start, you know, directing the Babis. And but the interesting thing is that Bab said, he who will manifest will come very later, you know, after me. He's not just going to come a couple of years or something like that after me. And but still, you know, there was, you know, that many claims that came from many people. Okay, it was after his martyrdom, before his martyrdom, even the skirmish started between Babis and government and the mullahs, and but it wasn't really getting out of hand until he was, you know, martyred. And Sobh-e Azal, of course, stayed around the city in Tehran for a while. And his parents, of course, were from the north of Tehran, and they had sounded like a prominent family there, that they had some places and some properties there. And so he lived sometimes there in north of Tehran, and sometimes came around Tehran and just was there. But apparently he didn't seem to be a very effective, you know, person. It sounded like he just didn't want to get too much involved and do the thing was necessary to get it done. But the faith started spreading, you know, spreading very fast and going all over the place. And as we said, because of the Shia's belief that when the Mahdi comes, they will establish the kingdom of heaven on earth, just like a Christian believe that Jesus or Christ come, he's going to establish the kingdom, he's going to, you know, have a military in being the faithful one and being in the horse, and the one on the horse, like in Revelation, he went on the horse, his name was the faithful, and he had the thing, and he judged all the nations and bring the kingdom of heaven on earth, and almost the same kind of a theme, or, you know, just like probably David Koresh also taught the same thing, you know, he's here to, he's the Messiah, he's the one that is going to have all those guns and, you know, change the government, and see, that's that kind of a mentality, of a revolutionary mentality, okay, got them in trouble. And the same thing happened here with these Babis. They had this mentality of, we are revolutionary, we are going to change the government, we're going to take over, and eventually, of course, the government got into them. And revolution never helped in the whole human history. Anytime you see there's a revolution, there's a lot of bloodshed, first. And second, it never helps. Because revolution is the idea of a few people. They might be a little ahead of others, okay? But others are not in tune with them, okay? So when they revolt, there's a lot of people that are not in tune with them. So they have to destroy those people that are not in tune with them. That's what, in every revolution, it's like a, you know, revolution in France. How many people went under the guillotine? They just cut their head off because they were not the same as they were. Even in revolution in Iran, how many people they killed? In every revolution, you see, there's a lot of killing. And still people are not in the stage of the consciousness to accept that, you know, that idea. Okay. That is what the best change is, the evolutionary change. And evolutionary change is by education, by reaching out, by teaching people. Just like Muhammad's movement, just like it was evolutionary kind of a movement. Okay. It took him 23 years to go back to Mecca. But for 23 years he had so many people preaching his teaching to so many other people. And they got ready little by little to the idea of, yeah, we need this new teaching. This teaching makes sense. It is wonderful. We like to be with him. And when he marched toward Mecca, actually he started with a very small band of people. But as he was going toward Mecca, many people heard and they came to join him. By the time he got to the gate of Mecca, he had such a large people. He had 120,000, you know, army with him, that the Meccans said, we can't fight these people. There's too many of them. So they just said, okay, we give up. And they just marched in. See, that was kind of a people that were ready for it. Okay. Just like, you know, we go right there and they say, no, everything is, you know, all the religion are one, and go out there and start yelling at the people and trying to say, you know, they are not ready. They haven't even heard about the great sign. Okay. This is like a Babis, they go there and they say, these Muslims, these very fanatic, deeply rooted, you know, ideas about what Islam is, and they tell them, you know, no, all the religion are the same, and the Christianity and the Judaism and Islam and Baha'i and this and you, they are not ready for it. So, but in the evolutionary process, when enough people reached and educated and ready for it, it just happens. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, I am opposed to revolution, any revolution. I am with evolution, okay? Because revolution is not is not helpful. I've never seen any revolution that really was helpful, just like the Russian revolution. They had it for 70 years. What happened to it? It just fell apart. It's the Iranian revolution. I went to Iran 2 years ago. It's terrible. Okay. Just because people are not ready. Everybody is still complaining, and, you know, actually they replaced Shah with many Shahs now. Okay. Because the people are not ready. The people that they have been there have been dynasty after dynasty after dynasty for last 2,500 years, and suddenly come and tell them, no, you can't have any Shah anymore. I'm not ready. You know, those people are not, they don't have the ability to see that. Okay? Because, and so that's why we have to educate, we have to reach out, we have to teach, we have to prepare people for the idea. Okay? And they are ready, you know, after we have many communities of life popped up all over the earth, and they're connected, just simply change the God, you see. That's why we're not opposing any government. Actually, we do encourage having government now. Without government, what would we have? Chaos. Okay? So we are not against any government or any established thing. The only thing we are trying to do to create the communist of life. Okay? That's the only thing we are going to do. And the more communist we like we create, okay, the stronger and more networking we will have together. Okay? And eventually this system is going to fall apart. It's not working. It's already not working. Okay? We will see it's not working anywhere. Okay? So eventually they have to fall apart. And then if there's nothing to replace it, what's going to happen? It's going to be a great chaos. But if we have established last revelation from God, which unifies everything together, and we have a lot of people already, their consciousness is been trained to think this way, okay, what's going to happen? Easily we can say, hey, there's an alternative. Do you want to try this alternative? Okay. And then easily can be accomplished. So I'm very, very against revolutions. Absolutely. No revolution. No. The evolution, yeah, that's great. But revolution doesn't work. But that's what exactly happened to Bobbies. Bobbies become very revolutionary. They try to change things. They try to fight things. They try to, you know, be, you know, militant. And then that's why they got, many times they got destroyed. They were murdered. And of course, God already prophesied that's going to happen. Now, if you remember in Fifth Seal, what happened? He said there's going to be many martyrs. There's going to be many in the white robes. They're going to die and they're going to be, you know, destroyed. And that's exactly happened to Bobbies. And actually, eventually, they came to a point that they attempted assassination of the Shah in Tehran. And that was when they round up all the remaining Bobbies and put them to prison. And of course, this time, government really got after the Bobbies. There was no excuse. If you were a Bobby, that was it. You weren't suspect, and you weren't in. That's why Sofia Azal left Tehran. They went to arrest him, but he already left. He ran away. You know, the moment they felt that they heard that there was an attempt of assassination of the Shah, he left Tehran and went to Iraq. And but his brother, Baha'u'llah, of course, was arrested and took to prison. And he was there a couple of months. And apparently, you know, he left the prison after a couple of months. We get a break here for 5 minutes. Just stretch out. She has already written down.
What is the social justice? What kind of social justice form? What kind of what kind of social justice Baha'u'llah bring with him that is different from the teachings of Mohammed and Christ?
Yeah. What is the social justice that Bab and Baha'u'llah brought to humanity, which is different than Prophet Muhammad? Okay, well, if you remember, in Old Testament, there was a lot of laws was passed. Okay, they said, if you do this and this and this, you know, you're gonna have to sacrifice so much lamb, and if you get that, you have to bring this kind of animal. It shouldn't be in blemish and perfect and this and that. So they create a lot of laws by Moses who brought this. But then the Christ came. Did he brought any law? He didn't brought any law at all. He brought the grace. Okay. But when he was in the temple, he said what? He said, the law, and also remember the prophecy of the Israel. Okay, in the time of his death, he said, the law giving will go to Judah until the Shiloh comes. Okay, the Judah was the tribe that all the kings of the Jews came from. Okay, David and his children all the way. Okay, and the law giving was given to Judah until Shiloh came. Who was Shiloh? The Messiah. Until the Messiah comes, and the Messiah came, and in the front of the temple, when Pharisees and Sadducees were questioning him and putting what happened in front of the temple, he started attacking them and telling them, you know, you're a generation of vipers and this and that, and he was preparing himself to be crucified. He said, the law giving. Okay, he said. What did he say? The kingdom will be taken away from you and will be given to another nation. Okay, and also by the prophecy of the Messiah coming, the law giving of the tribe of Judah was finished. So the law giving was given to next Messiah manifestation, and when Prophet Muhammad came, he brought a lot of laws by himself. So a lot of social law that he brought, that is called Sharia in Islam, are the God's law for humanity. Okay, who says that's why when Bab and Baha'i came, they didn't bring any laws for humanity either. Okay, neither Baba brought any laws in that detail for humanity or the mission. Okay, so eventually, of course, it had to be put. And if you study Islamic history, for around 400 years, almost the only thing they did was they established the jurisprudence. Jurisprudence. And that's what all they did. They discussed many different ways of implementing Muhammad's law to their society. One says, Muhammad said, if somebody sold something for the first time, if he repented, you forgive him. Okay. But if the second time he did it, you cut one of his fingers. It's pretty harsh, isn't it? Cutting someone's fingers. Okay. But imagine the implementation of this law. First of all, the first time, okay, you made a mistake. But the second time you're doing it, it's no longer a mistake. Of course, the first requirement for implementing these laws is to create a just society. Everybody has the minimum to live. Okay, you cannot implement God's law in an unjust society. Okay, if a person doesn't have anything to eat and he goes and steals bread, you don't cut his hand. Okay, he's hungry. He has to have a bread. Okay, you can't do that. Okay, but if he has bread, he has all the minimum, and still he went and steals the bread, what's going to happen? Because there's something wrong with this guy. Okay, and then. But even for the first time, you say, okay, you made a mistake. You can go away. But for the second time he does it, he is really a problem. Okay. Now, you can't cut his finger. What's happened? You don't put him in a prison. You know, you
you judge him by also by witness. Okay. If there is an accusation, there should be three adult, mature person witness that thing, that crime.
Okay.
So you can't just accuse someone of doing something without having witnesses. Okay. So if I have three adult, mature person witness that, and he did it for the second time, okay, then it's pretty much judged that he has done the work. Of course, you have to also investigate and be sure these three people are not lying and are not being against him and all that happened. And once you said yes, for sure it happened, then you don't want him to be in prison. So you don't have to spend too much money making all these prisons. And then we have, you know, just one of the problems we have noticed in this country, they keep building prison. You know, they don't have enough. Prisons are built for 500 people, they have around 900 people in them. And they're overcrowded. And in prison, when you go to prison, if you are a petty thief, you become a massive thief when you get out. Okay? So it has a punishment that it hurts. Anytime he wants to steal something, he remembers, hey, I'm gonna lose my other finger if I steal next time. So it has a very painful thing. It is a reminder all the time of him not to do it. Okay, it saves a lot of money of the taxpayers, and I guess that part Western mind likes the taxpayer thing. And so it has a lot of social and economical reason for it that is it can be implemented, you know, in the society. So then, okay, but Bab and Baha'i brought a more universal point of view of justice. That's what, you know, Baha'u'llah is recommending, that there should be a house of justice in every city, in every nation, in every, and eventually it's going to be a universal house of justice. And that. Does that answer your question?
Okay.
So, of course, those laws, of course, have to be, you know, studied again, and, you know, as the missions, you know, spreads, and if we ever get in a place, probably, I don't know too much about Sharia myself. Okay, I never ready or studied, or if there is something even in that book that, or Sharia or God's law, that doesn't make sense, of course human shouldn't accept them and just forget about them. Okay. So we were Sufi Ezel and both Baha'u'llah, they go to Iraq. They, you know, they got exiled, of course. Sufi Ezel run away from Tehran and goes to Iraq, and Baha'u'llah is exiled. He said, you know, you can't stay in Tehran anymore. And they go there and they start directing the Babi's affair from Iraq. Apparently, again, as we said, you know, a lot of people again start claiming that they are, you know, they are the one who Bab said is gonna come. Even they said they are the, you know, manifestation of the Imam Hussein, one of the Imams, that apparently they were looking for him to come. Although Bab said that those 19 people, one of them was Imam Hussein. Because as you say, 12 Imams and Prophet and his thing all made the 19. But still people, you know, went down and claimed, and actually there was a lot of upheaval, and apparently Babis killed one of them, you know, drowned him. You know, he started apparently get a lot of followers or something, so they felt, you know, he's a threat to their movement, so he drowned him. And but Sufi Ezel apparently more and more withdrew from leadership. He went away and gave more affairs at the hand of Baha'u'llah, and Baha'u'llah become more prominent in the Babi's movement, and Bab, you know, and Sufi Ezel became less prominent, and
Baha'u'llah eventually got in a point that a lot of Babis got very irritated with him, and they eventually excommunicated him from Babis, and he left Babis, and he went, according to one story, he went and joined some Sufis order somewhere in the mountains. Apparently for a while he went there and meditated and worked with them and all that. But so Bahazal apparently couldn't live with him, without him. Okay. As I said, he was his tutor from his childhood. He was always, you know, directing him, teaching him, being with him, and all that. Probably sounded like he had some attachment to him, so he sent for him. And so Bahazal actually sounded like completely withdraw himself, you know, and... of course, you know, and also Babis become accepting him more and more as their leader. And eventually there is a skirmish between Babis in Iraq also with the Muslims in that country. And that is when Baha'u'llah and Sofyan Ezel both are exiled to the Turkish territory. And they both go toward west. They come toward Jerusalem. Okay. And you can see here, you can see a glimpse of the plan of God. That, okay, if Baha'u'llah and Sofyan Ezel wouldn't come toward west, would we ever hear from them? Probably not. Okay. Now, they are exiled toward the west. They go to Turkish territory, and they stay there. And, of course, they stay for a small city, and then they're exiled in another city. I guess eventually they end in Akka. There's Akka, you know? There's a city close to Jerusalem, some place like that. And in there, eventually, Baha'u'llah claims that he is the manifestation that Bab was talking about. 10 years after the martyrdom of Bab, he claims that he is the manifestation that he was talking about. Of course, as you said, in his childhood he was his mother and father died, just like Bab. His mother died early, apparently, you know. And then his father, when his mother dies, his father marries another woman, and that is where Sofyan Ezel comes. So they're half-brothers, Sofyan Ezel and Baha'u'llah. And also we have to say that Bab also gave himself the title Sofyan Ezel, Baha'u'llah too. So in a sense it was two confusing names about Baha'u'llah that we're talking about here. And this is Baha'u'llah who become Babis first, and then he keeps being Babis home. And while they're talking about Bab and Sina, Sofyan Ezel, of course, like a little brother, always hear what they're talking about, and eventually he also becomes interested and gets to the Babi movement. He's prisoned in Tehran, then exiled to Iraq, and eventually exiled from Iraq to Akka. And in 1866, he claims that he is the manifestation that Bab was talking about. And by this time, Babis were almost absolutely, completely destroyed in Iran. There were so many fights against them, government against them. They were actually were underground, if any left in Iran. And when Baha'u'llah claimed he's the major manifestation, and he sends decrees that you don't have to get engaged with any political system or, you know, be militant. And at this time also there was a lot of, as he said, Bab was what? Was a merchant. It was a merchant family. So when he claimed his culmination, a lot of merchants became Babis. And you know, most of the merchant like calm,
insecure environment. The revolution, all the investors goes out of country. Okay, they want a calm environment so their money is safe. Okay. So a lot of Babis, they're looking for somebody to come and tell, hey, pull it up. Okay, let's create a nice calm environment so we can work, you know, our money and invest the way we want it. So the way Bahá'u'lláh came and say, you don't have to engage to those militancy anymore. So all these measures said, yeah, that's what we want. So they support him. Okay. And when he got that support, of course, everybody else started supporting him, and very few Babis left actually there and then. And so Bahá'u'lláh became the major, you know, leader in the Baha'i movement. And of course the Babis, they changed their name to Baha'is. And it was then that that Professor Burani that we talked about in France, he read about Baha, and he read about his movement, his martyrdom, and he got fired up. He just loved the story. He just wanted to know more about Baha and his movement and all that. So he goes to Iran. Okay? He goes to Iran to see what Baha is doing there. He doesn't want any Babi. You know, eventually he realizes they are now called Baha'is. Okay? And he goes to Baha, so he had all these books written about Bab and how he did, how he was martyred, he had written about Bayan and all that thing. And he goes and talks to Bab, and he knew that the Sopha Azal was chosen by Bab as the leader and everything. And he goes to Baha'is and talk about them. They even denied such a thing exists as Sopha Azal. You know, they discredit Bab, you know, to very low level. And they're talking about Baha'u'llah, and they're trying to, you know, discredit Babis completely, and they said, this is Baha'i now, you know, Baha. And eventually he finds out where the Sopha Azal is. And eventually he finds few Babis that discuss it. That's why that question you asked, you know, about they are peaceful, the Baha'is are peaceful. That is what happens. Okay. They weren't peaceful. Babis weren't peaceful in the beginning. So what you read that book, the Release of the Sun, it is a Baha'i's point of view. Okay. That's what happened. And then, of course, he eventually goes, of course, meets Sopha Azal in Akka, and even he meets Baha'u'llah. And he comes back, of course, he becomes very critical of what they have done to Babi's movement, and he writes a lot of literature about. Actually, you can find two kind of literature in Baha'i teaching. One of them is about Bab, those people who realized what Bab did and how did he accomplish things, and he was martyred, and those who was written after Baha claims, and they change. That's what they say, old history and the new history. But anyway, it's a and so they changed a lot of things in a Babi's movement, and that's why actually this year, because I was going to have this lecture, I wrote something in the computer to people. Does anybody have any, you know, any knowledge about Sopha Azal? And I received a message from Baha'inet. They have a network, computer network, and she said, you know, yeah, there's a Baha'inet, why don't you join us? I said, great, sure. You know, I joined their net, and I started receiving their messages, and of course they always talk about Baha'u'llah, this Baha'u'llah, that other, and I just didn't say anything, and eventually she said, why don't you say anything, you know, to us? You know? And I wrote to them exactly what I thought. I gave my peace of mind. And I said, hey,
are you sure?
Yeah, actually, yeah. I said, are you sure you want me to say something? She said, yeah, we'd like to see you. So I said, okay, that's how I feel. And I wrote to them, you know, exactly how, you know, I feel about Bab and how Bab came and how Baha'i is chosen only to bring the message to West. And he wasn't really the major manifestation, but he was just chosen by God, so we can hear about Bab and Baha'i teaching to the West. And also I told them that, you know, here is another major manifestation and it's a greater teaching here, and come and join us. Actually, I invited them to this lecture. And of course, they all got very upset and everybody got quiet. Huh? No, they dropped me. They dropped me just like a hot iron. Yeah, but you can see so much similarity between Christ's teaching and Bab's teaching. What happened to Christ and what happened to Bab? Okay, Christ only taught for 3.5 years. Okay, and then he was crucified. Bab taught only 4 years and he was crucified. Okay, and then he's and then Paul came and interpreted what Christ meant with all this teaching. So Paul became more prominent than Christ. Baha'u'llah came and said what Bab meant. Baha'u'llah became more prominent than Bab. And also you can see they are at the same triangle.
Can I help?
Yeah, thanks. You can see the triangle. The Baha'i, Ba'an, and Christianity. And of course, there's not much good speaking, so it's okay. So, and also you can see that there's a lot of laws in Judaism, and there's a lot of love in Islam. So like these three have something in common, and these three have something. Actually, there's a lot of purification technique also in the Anandama, okay, meditation and that. And there, of course. So, so Baha'i became very prominent, and we said this. There is two periods, right? There's two periods in the Baha'i and Babi movement. The Bab period and Baha'i period. And if you study the Bab, you can see that it was different point of the view, and Bab said different than what the Baha'i brought. Of course, Baha'i brought a much, much mellower religion. They became completely out of any political movement or anything, and still they don't get involved at all. And but Baha'u'llah just as we said, Bab is almost completely destroyed in Iran. Just what would happen if Baha'u'llah would not have come to the West and brought, you know, Baha'i to the West? And also after him, his son became the leader of the Baha'is, and he traveled to the West. Okay. I think he was the person who really actually reached to the West. He went to Europe, and he went to the United States, and even his grandson, Shoghi Effendi, they sent to Harvard University, and he got his education in Harvard. So you can see he's becoming more and more westernized and reaching to the West, just like it had to come here. And we, you know, just imagine, I knew about Bab, for example, and I would come and say, Bab is one of the major manifestations. Nobody knew about Bab here. Who was Bab? What are you talking about? And, but, okay, any question? What time is it? We don't have much time, huh? 15 minutes, huh? Okay. Okay, also Bab's teaching had to be modified. Okay, because as we said, it wasn't perfect. It was, you know, it destroyed them. Okay, because they couldn't, you know, they couldn't survive in that hostile environment. So they had to modify those things. So coming of Baha'u'llah was the will of God. There's no doubt about that. It's not something that you say, no, Baha'u'llah wasn't the will of God at all. It was the will of God. But Bab was the major manifestation. Bab was the fulfiller of the prophecies. Okay. Baha'u'llah, there was no prophecy that Baha'u'llah fulfilled. The only thing he claimed was, I am the one Bab said is going to come. Okay. And Bab said, actually, the one who's going to come is going to be much, much later than I'm going to come. Okay. Actually, the year who proclaimed to be the Bab is 1844. And I was born in 1944. Almost exactly 100 years to the point, you know, of his proclamation. So it's kind of it's interesting thing that just exactly 100 years, you know, to the time that he claimed it to be the manifestation. And and for that, why Baha'u'llah cannot be the major manifestation whom Bab predicted to come? Yet took his Persian. He predicted the next manifestation will come much later. Bab considered himself as a major manifestation. Okay. Bab said, I am the major manifestation. Bab gave Subha Azal the title and he gave him himself. He actually called Subha Azal the titles. And actually Subha Azal became so forgotten with the Babis and Baha'is that when he died there was no one around him. He died, the only person around him was his son. He did completely deserted him, absolutely. And such as Morning of the Eternity, that's what it means from Hazar. Morning of the Eternity. Baha'u'llah, second point, and the One. Bab sent his personal belongings to Subha Azal, open pen, case, paper, writings, clothing. This meant Bab outwardly symbolized the unity of the spirit with Subha Azal. Five, Bab wrote a testamental deposition nominating Azal as his successor. So he wrote it down, that he is my successor. And six, Professor Brani saw the original document written and sealed by Bab himself, which appointed Subha Azal as his successor. Brani published a facsimile of a translation of the Arabic text of this document. That is one of those French books that I said they have, that they have over there. Bab also gave written notice of this appointment to the Letters of the Living, those who were still alive. Baha'u'llah himself praised Subha Azal as the leader of the Babis before he claimed even in Iran. The city Baha'is claim as the holy Jerusalem is not the one which is supposed to be in the West. Okay, there was one prediction. There is one prophecy that it says there is going to be two holy cities. That everything, okay, there is one in the east, which is Jerusalem, okay, and everything starts from there. But there is going to be a city in the west that everything is going to finish. So there is a new Jerusalem, okay, and they predicted that city will be in the west. Okay. That's another fulfillment of the prophecy, that culmination of all these things, which is came to the great sign, came west, in the west. Mm-hmm. It wasn't revealed to me when I was in Iran. It wasn't revealed when I was in the east. Of course, it is supposed, the person who brings it is supposed to be from the east, who sits on the chair, which is the symbol of the west. So it's a kind of, again, unifying the East and the West together. Okay. Just like Eastern soul is very religious and very spiritual and the West very intellectual and scientific. Okay. Now it's again to bring those together. Just like, you know, it's just not unifying one teaching, you're unifying the whole thing. It's just putting everything together.
Okay.
So the city that Baha'is mostly say they are in Jerusalem. The activities in Jerusalem, they are in that place. So that is not the new Jerusalem that it was predicted will be in the West. All previous manifestations are not. All previous manifestations are not for Baha'u'llah, as predicted by Bab, will be the case of the coming of the major manifestation. Okay, the other thing Bab said was when that major manifestation comes, every manifestation came before him were for him to culminate the teaching, the revelation. Isn't it happened here? Every one of them came to what? To bring a part of the great sign. So they all came to bring a part of it. So with this comes, all of them came to perfect this. Now it is perfect. It's put together at the culmination of all the revelation before it. Baha'u'llah teaching is not doing that. Actually, Baha'u'llah says anything before him is null and void. Okay? Actually, that's what another say I told them in the that thing. Okay? The great sign and the EDP presents the teaching of the great prophet in the past. Okay? In Bayan, Bab writes, he whom he will manifest, he is divine, eternal divine path. His command is God's command. He is not to be asked why he's doing whatever he's doing. Nobody's asking, so it's okay. All previous manifestations were for him. And also another thing is that in the Baha'i teaching, they, as we mentioned yesterday, they don't consider mystical path. They don't talk about Hinduism and Buddhism and all that. Of course, actually somebody asked Abdul Baha about what about Buddhism, and his answer was it was okay then. He did his job and it's no longer good. It's finished. Just like that's how the feeling is about every other religion before it. But we don't say that. We say everything in the past, even the human history is a lesson for us to learn from it, and every religion came as a place in the great sign. We are not destroying anything. Buddhists, Hindus, Sufis, Kabbalists, all of them have a place in the great sign. So that is another, you know, sign that not can be the last one or the manifestation that it's claimed. And also, as we said, the history was changed in Baha'is. There was an old era, which is absolutely they tried to destroy it, eliminate it. You know? And that's not good. They shouldn't have done that. Just like, I told them all this thing in that message. they dropped me like a lead. Actually, I told them, you know, they can send my message to their headquarters and invite them to come here and meet the new revelation. You know, and just like a Prophet Muhammad sent messengers to the leaders of the world, and they didn't come. You know, it's the same thing. This time we have network. We don't have to send anyone. I send the letter and say that this is an invitation. To you, it's invitation to the Baha'i people, and it's invitation to your leaders to come to see the new revelation. If you didn't accept it, if you didn't see the truth in it, that's fine. You know, you can go away. But come and look. You know, at least. That's right. That is the problem. That is the doing. They are doing the same thing that the Muslims did to them. Okay? The Muslims, they want to hear what they have. Okay? This is exactly what previous manifestation, people in previous manifestation do exactly to the new people in the new, you know, teaching the same thing other people did to them. But in our teaching, we are not close to anything. Even any new revelation or any manifestation comes, it's going to be a part of the great sign. Even if prophet comes and say, I am a new prophet and I have this teaching, you say, okay, let's see where you fall in the great sign. So we don't oppose anyone. We can't oppose anyone because it covers everything that was there and will come. Even if prophet comes and they claim that God talked to them, they should fall somewhere in the great sign. They either were mystic, they either talking about the communities, we need community, either they, you know, they talk that you people need to sacrifice and give of yourself to the communities in order to create a good community, or they say, hey, don't be attached to the result of your actions, and all that. So, but they have been given the warning. So, let's see what happened to them. Why teaching Baha'i people?
Baha'u'llah admitted himself that he was not the last prophet.
Yeah.
And he also admitted getting a message from God that the Baha'is did not get their teaching together, it would be given to another race.
Did it?
So they knew. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of them are aware of that.
Actually, when Baha'i died, Baha'u'llah died, there was again a great crisis for the leadership between Abdul Baha and another son, Baha'u'llah. And then when Abdul Baha'i died, there was also some crisis. Actually, some people say Shoghi Effendi interfered with Abdul Baha's will. Okay, there was a big skirmish was there. And then Shoghi Effendi did, actually Baha'i faith split to two.
Crisis
continued. Actually, yeah, there's a lot of a story what happened to them, and there is a lot of problem. They had a lot of struggle about who is gonna, you know, come after Baha'u'llah, who is gonna, you know, and Abdul Baha almost disowned all his family by the end of his life, you know, and Shoghi Effendi disowned all of his family, so, and they called them the covenant broker. So we'll get a little deeper in that pretty soon. Okay, problem with Baha'i teaching: infallibility of the house of justice. Okay, first of all, Baha'u'llah himself was infallible. Oh, okay, he's a prophet, he's connected, we can say it's okay. But I even don't buy that. If I made a mistake, you can tell me that, hey, actually you made a mistake here. Okay, and we can talk about it, who is right. Okay. If I made a mistake, I accept it. Okay, it was a mistake. Sorry, let's do a better job. Okay. So there's nobody infallible in the body. The only thing that's infallible is in the spirit, it's God. Okay, so the very idea of infallibility in the body is a difference. Okay. And of course, after Baha, is that Abdul Baha was infallible. Do you understand what infallible means? No fault. He has no fault. Yeah. He has no fault. That's right? Infallible. Pope, yeah. Pope is infallible. Exactly. See? And that is the most stupid idea anybody can have on this earth. That anybody is infallible. Nobody is infallible. As far as you are in the body, you are infallible. And then it came to Shoghi Effendi, he was infallible. That's why they had to disown the family. Because the family didn't disagree with them. As we know, the absolute power corrupts absolutely. So Abdul Baha had to disown all his family because they didn't agree with him. And they said, you know, he's he's covenant breaker. His mother, his brothers, sisters, all of them become covenant breakers, and Shoghi Effendi did the same thing. Actually, his mother-in-law, I guess, I don't remember exactly, mother-in-law or grandmother or something, she was the person who pushed Abdul Baha to choose Shoghi Effendi as his successor. And after Shoghi Effendi became the leader of the Baha'is, you know, later on he even disowned her. You know, and pushed her out of. So it's the very idea of infallible. And then after Shoghi Effendi, of course, they created the House of Justice. Now the House of Justice is infallible. Okay. They don't make a mistake. And that is not the truth. Lack of definition of who a Paravipra is. Okay, they talk about, okay, they don't have the concept of Paravipra. Who's a Paravipra? Who is a leader? Who is a person that can accept the leadership of the, you know, a group? The person who follows the eternal divine path, who meditates, who's connected, who wants to create the commons of life, who's ready to sacrifice, and who's surrendered and submission to God. He's uninfallible. God is infallible. If he's connected, he's infallible. If I make a mistake, I'm not connected. I'm losing connection. Okay. If you made a mistake, you lose connection. Okay? So that's why it's so important all the time being connected. All the time, you know, get rid of our, you know, concept and being connected to the world. To the world, of course, we made mistakes. Okay? We don't think we made mistakes. We think we're doing good. But how do you know somebody makes mistakes? Look at their life. Are they happy? Are they in flow? Are they, you know, their spirit reaches other people? You know, if they're connected, their spirit reaches other people. Okay. If it's not, their ego becomes smaller and smaller. The only thing they think, me, 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 me. There's no spirit flows to them. It just dies inside. Okay. So that's why all this technique is given. What? Expand us. Let the spirit flow. If the leader doesn't have the spirit to flow to him, the spirit reaches no one. Okay. So if the very idea of Paravipra or infallibility, okay, and they don't have that, they don't know really who is, who. They don't have any yardstick to know who is really connected. Yeah, that's another thing. General notion that all religions are basically the same. We see that in our teaching that is not true. Every religion has a specific message for humanity. They are the same in a many, many, many aspects, of course, but every religion also has very a specific message for humanity. So it's not only basically the same, but also it has a specific message for humanity. That's another thing. Lack of support for Far East teaching, which we just talked about. They don't include Hinduism and Buddhism. Actually, there's no literature about mystical path or, you know, Sufis or Buddhists or Hindus or, you know, Kabbalists or anything like that. God cannot be known by man. Oh, there's another thing. Why it says God cannot be known by man? Okay. That's ridiculous. As we said, knowing God is so simple, they keep missing it. It's not that he's not cannot be known by man, but he is so simple to know that we keep missing him. Okay? That is not true. Because God created everything. From what? From himself. How can we then not knowing him? Okay. And their problem here is because they didn't know mystical teaching. They didn't know Hinduism, they didn't know Buddhism, they didn't know, you know, all those teachings of the Far East. Okay. Because teaching the Far East, they knew God is everything. They knew the Atman is Atman. Okay. If they knew that, he wouldn't say that. Okay. But because they didn't know that and they had discussed it for thousands of years and tried to understand him and they didn't understand him, so he concluded God cannot be known. Okay. That is not correct. What Baha'i mostly did was interpret Bab's teaching and made life easier for Babis, Baha'is, to live with others. Okay. So he was necessary. One of his functions was that. Another function was what? To bring teaching to the West. So we will know them when we come to the West. So I didn't know too much about Baha'is when I was in Iran. I've heard about them, but I never had any contact. Probably I had once contact, very, very brief contact with them. But they were completely different kind of a community, so it wasn't too much interrelationship between us. I knew them here when I came here. Actually, the whole revelation came to me when I went to Chicago and I was visiting the temple. That the whole revelation just, you know, rushed upon me. That's just a long story. Don't have time for it. That's almost 11. Okay, interesting point in Babis and Baha'i's teaching, two holy cities, as we talked about. We're talking about this. There's going to be two holy cities, one in the east and one in the west. Okay? That the one in the east is they call it Jabalga, the city in the east, or Jerusalem, is in the direction of the beginning, and Jabarsa. We're going to call this city Jabarsa. The city in the west, the New Jerusalem, the city in the direction of the return and ending. Okay, so this is the city of the return and the ending. And when we moved here, 2-3 months later, it's called the city of the vision. I would suggest to call it city with the vision, because it has such a nice vision everywhere. Okay, but I never wrote it. And then they choose the after vision, and I realized that one is even better than with the vision. After the vision means there is a vision that is of it. Anytime Messiah returns, it is the time of resurrection. That's another point that Bob made, that a lot of people in the Bible, they read there's a day of resurrection, everybody waiting, the sky opens and Messiah comes and everybody is wake up from the dead and they go to the sky and get caught with the Christ and all that. Okay, but Bob cleared it very well, exactly the way we teach here, that whenever Messiah come, whenever the Spirit of God could come to the earth, that is the day of resurrection. Okay. That is why we have so many people are reborn now. Why we have so many people on earth? There's so many people here, but they have all been resurrected, and this is the time of purification, it's the time of judgment, it's the time of, you know, everything that we see is happening. Why there's so much destruction and all that? Because, you know, a lot of it's been resurrected. It's the time of tribulation, it is the time for purification. Also, it goes very well with the seven seals in the Revelation. Anytime a seal is open, what happens? A great disaster comes and destruction comes and many people get distracted. It's a time. This goes very well with the teaching about the seven seal. The revelation of the Bible, each time seal open, okay, we talk about that. Coming of the prophet, Messiah is the manifestation of the consciousness, not a physical manifestation. That was another thing Bob made it clear. Because Muslim also, we said, was waiting for the Imam come, almost exactly the same, the Christian are waiting for Christ to come. Okay. As the skies open and Christ comes and says everybody is okay and punishes the bad one that sits and takes the seats away. And Bob made it clear that's not true. Okay. That the manifestation comes because, you know, the humanity needs a new, you know, evolutionary process to quite a higher thing. What did Bab and Baha'u'llah accomplish? They no longer were chosen from the children of Abraham. Well, apparently Bab was, because he was a Sayyid, as we said. He was one of the children of, you know, from the descendant of the Prophet Muhammad. He was a Sayyid. Okay. But Baha'u'llah wasn't anymore. But that's another thing that Bab fulfilled the prophecy of the Shia Muslim, that they were waiting from someone to come from Prophet Muhammad, and he did. So in a sense, he fulfilled prophecy in that sense. Grace came with Isa, love with Muhammad, and the universalism with Bab and Baha'u'llah. Okay. And we say one of the pitfalls of the first four series are what? Narrowness of the mind. Okay. You become narrow, okay? If you're not Hindu, okay, you're no good. If you're not a Jew, you're not a chosen person. If you're not Christian, you're lost. If you're not Muslim, you're not following the last prophet. Okay? Each of them separate themselves from other people. Okay? When you are a Christian, you're better than everyone else, isn't it? When you're a Jew, you're better than everyone else, isn't it? When you're a Muslim, you're better than everyone else. You see, that's a separation, that's a knowledge of them. But here is no longer knowledge, it's a universal. Everything is, all religions are basically the same. They're good. Okay. Okay. Has humanity understood their message, teaching? Okay. Have they? No, of course not. Has their followers understood their message? Has they? Their followers? Probably not. Most of them not. What the scripture, what the scripture about this? What the scripture says? Okay, martyrdom. Okay, what was the prediction of coming? Why would you accept Baha'i teaching or Bab teaching as the fifth seal? Why? Of course, the revelation came to me when I went to the temple. That's one of the very high points. Okay? Because before that, I was just receiving all this consciousness, this connection coming to me, you know, as I said, you know, I was supposed to finish my degree, you know. I didn't come here to become a prophet or a messenger. I came here to finish my education. And then I couldn't. I was sitting reading about management and suddenly I said, oh, what about that? I have to go to Bible and read this and read that and completely go away from the I'm sitting in the class, in the management class, and I'm, you know, listening to the professor, and the professor said, okay, this is the hierarchy of in an organization. And suddenly I said, yeah, it looks like the hierarchy in the Jewish, you know, side is, you know, triangle upward. Hey, this doesn't mean the hierarchy means the hierarchy. I am out of school. I'm out of class. I'm absolutely being taken away from the place and going to the thing about those things. So I went to Chicago just to get rid of this thought, you know. And of course, my cousin was there, and I went there the first night we go there. He suggests we go and, you know, meet the Baha'i temple next day. I said okay, and we went to the next day. The moment we went, there's a steps here, and you can see the temple. And then you come over the steps, suddenly the temple is right there. It's pretty, it's very beautiful. And then there's a swastika, and then Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and Baha'i signs there. You know, and just I saw that, it just flashed back everything. And that was it. You know, not thinking about this thing was out of the window, and, you know, well, it's a long story anyway, so... So that's one of the reasons we accept Baha'i as one of the signs of the great sign. And second is the prophecy of martyrdom in the fifth seal in the Revelation. What's it talk about? You know, they will be killed, they will be martyred and all that. They are lost. Okay. Also, Bible says what? It's not perfect. Okay. They have to wait a while. Also, the saints cry and say, oh, how long are we going to wait? And God says, you have to wait a while. A while means 100 years. It doesn't mean 10 years or something. A while means, to God, a while means a longer time. It will be a mystery until the seven angel comes. Also, you know, you can blame them why they don't understand and they're lost, because God said it's going to be a mystery until the seven angel comes. And what is the seven angel? The angel of the seventh seal, okay, and that is our seal, the seventh seal that brings everything together. The mystery of God is finished; it's been given to humanity. A spiritual message of the fifth seal in the great sign. Okay, it's in the fifth seal in the great sign. It is universalism. Okay, the message is universalism, expansion of the mind, a part of the eternal divine path, and the great sign. This message was necessary to complete the eternal divine path. What's the relationship between the fifth seal and the great sign? It is the fifth seal. It shows the universalism is necessary in order for the community of light to be manifested. It is a part of the plan of God. Bob, as the Messiah, the first begotten Son of God, has brought it to us. It is the part of the great truth, the great sign, and the eternal divine path. Each sealed in the great sign is a part of the great truth. The whole is greater than each part. The whole has light. Separate each organ part from the body, no life will exist. However, parts are needed for life to manifest. Each sign in the great sign are a part of greater truth, the great sign and the eternal divine path. The whole is greater than the part. The whole has many different parts, as body has many different organs. When these different parts, organs are put together, life can be manifested. Separate parts, organs are lifeless. That's why all these divisions have to be put together to give life to God's plan or manifestation. Put them separate, they become lifeless. And that's exactly what happens to most of the religions in the world right now. Are they having any life anymore? No, they're lifeless. All of them are dead. The dead body just lying around all over the world. We need life. We are bringing life to humanity. We are putting the organs together and says, oh, you can't have the stomach in the Asia and the heart in Africa and the, his brain in somewhere else. You have to put them together and then put the spirit into it, then you are going to have life. So you have bringing life to this world. The mission as the body and all its component parts has to be received in whole, or our teaching is the spirit life giving life to these parts. These together will manifest the kingdom of heaven on earth. Accept only one or few parts of the mission and reject other parts is like receiving a few organs of the body and expecting to have normal life, receiving life. Now you can accept a part of the mission and not accept another part. You can say, okay, I accept the great sign, but I'm not going to practice your, rituals. Okay, or I accept only Christianity and Judaism and Far East philosophy. I'm not going to go to Islam because it's after Christ. Okay, so or all the all the all the.